You're listening to Proof to Product, and this is episode 4. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Kristen Lay of Thimble Press. Thimble Press is a lifestyle brand that focuses on creating product and experience that make you want to celebrate life's moments, big and small. She created the company out of her garage in 2012, and Thimble Press has had tremendous growth since then. She now has a team of 15 full-time and part-time employees, and the company occupies 7,000 square feet space that includes 2 brick-and-mortar retail locations. Kristen's products are sold in over 1,500 retail stores internationally, and she continues to work with brands to create unique collaborations and partnership opportunities. Kristen attended boot camp in 2012 prior to launching to the wholesale market, and on today's episode, we're talking about hiring from within, fostering a team environment, things to consider when entering professional partnerships and collaborations, and how she fell into business backwards. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today. We're excited to have you.
I'm excited to chat with you guys.
Of course. We love having our alums back. So I like to start off by talking about your story. So can you give us a rundown on how Thimble Press got its start?
Yeah. So I bought a letterpress in 2011 after closing a design studio I had and taking a full-time job with a school doing marketing. And I just felt this need to do things with my hands and to kind of dig in and almost find a new creative energy within myself. Yeah. And because I was kind of burned out on what I had been doing. And I found a letterpress in Kentucky and brought it back to Jackson on a trailer. And wow. I stared at it for 6 months, literally 6 months. And finally had a mentor come over and he was like, okay, you gotta try this out. And so he helped me really understand the press. And from there, I started just drawing and creating. And honestly, I did it more for myself than anything. And I lived with a girl at the time who had an Etsy shop. And she said, you really should sell, like start an Etsy. And if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would be doing Thimble Press. She really encouraged me to kind of like branch out. And her name is Kate Thomas. And she has a shop called Little Things Studio. And her husband live in Nashville, Tennessee. They're awesome people. And she showed me like Uline and shipping supplies. And I began putting stuff up on Etsy, honestly, with no real brand in mind. I didn't start, you know, I think there's 2 ways you start a company. You like literally fall into it from a hobby, or you start with a purpose of wanting to start a company and right. you really do everything from ground up. And mine was more, I fell in backwards. because I had a full-time job, and I had a full-time job a year and a half into Thimble Press. So that was pretty crazy. But I started doing it and I started selling things on Etsy. And it honestly, it's like a runner's high almost. Oh, yeah. When people are buying your stuff on Etsy, you're like, what? People like my stuff? That's so cool. And I had a name for it. And the name came from, I've been collecting thimbles my whole life. My mom started the collection for me along with a porcelain doll collection. Thank God. I don't know where those dolls went.
Porcelain doll press doesn't have the same ring to it.
They were so creepy. My mom wouldn't let me play with them. And it was just really weird. But she's probably, if she's listening to this, she's probably like dying. But she did start the thimble collection, which was really cool. And so everywhere I traveled, I would get a thimble and it would mark my travel. And, you know, thimbles are also known, they have a little symbolism in terms of friendship and love. And so I really, really liked that. And cool. I wanted to create my own word, my own name that I could trademark. And because I had done that with my previous company, Cultographic, which is a mouthful, which Thimble Press is too. Imagine saying that every time you call someone. T is for Tom, H is in hat, I is for igloo. But I really loved the name because also my grandmother's the taught me how to sew.
That's awesome.
And so that was really special. And at the time I was doing like fabrics and paper. So thimble press, so textiles and paper. It made a lot of sense. So that's how the name came to be.
What an amazing backstory. I love that. I think naming a business is one of the hardest things that people go through. I think they just want to get started, but yet I need a business name.
Well, but the thing is like I said, like I wasn't going into this saying I want to start a business. Right. I just needed a name for my Etsy shop.
Right.
So it really wasn't this like thought out plan. And I have gone through and done those plans now.
Those exercises.
And, but when I started, it was just I need an Etsy shop to sell my stuff that I'm making. And honestly, I wish Thimble Press, now looking at our line, we have so many different products and I love to create and draw, and we have letterpress and then we have hand painted stuff, which are two different looks almost put on. And so sometimes our line is like very like eclectic and just like kind of all over the place. But honestly, that's my personality. So I used to get really down and out about it. And I was like, man, I wish I had a more cohesive look to all of my products, like Mega Bell and Union. I feel like she has a great cohesive look. And I sat one day and I thought, you know what though? This is totally my personality. I'm wacky and crazy and weird. And I love lots of color and I love drawing and I love painting and I love trying new things. So truly this line is my personality come to life.
And I do think it is cohesive. I do think it looks fantastic. I mean, it definitely has a very distinct style.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe because I know you.
Well, yeah, maybe.
You're too close to it too. I will say that. But so let's – I love that story. I love how you got started, and I think a lot of people can relate to that backwards fall into business, how you described it. Talk about your transition into wholesale, because I think that that's an area a lot of people have trouble with. I think there's a lot of doubt around, am I ready to wholesale? So I know you came through our e-course. I think that was in 2011 or 12.
Yes. It was 2013.
That's right, before the NSS. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because you saved my life.
Oh, stop. But that was your first time wholesaling, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so literally I was approached. I was doing craft shows like every weekend. Like this is year 2012. I was chasing after it. I would say September at Renegade is kind of where I realized that this was no longer a hobby, that I was obviously very passionate about Thimble Press.
Right.
And I wanted to do this the rest of my life or as long as I can. Like I truly love it. I still feel that way today. But this woman approached me, she walked into the booth and she said, I'm with the Chicago Gift Market and I think you would be great at doing, the show in January. This is September.
Right.
And it's wholesale. It's a wholesale show. And I looked at her and I said, and I'm not kidding, so this should make everyone feel really smart. And I said, what's wholesale? And I don't know why I didn't. I mean, I knew kind of what it was, but because my it's crazy. My life, my grandfathers both owned small businesses, pharmacies. They're pharmacists. So we would go to gift shows every year. And I just thought that was where you got the free perfume samples, you know? Like, but so anyway, I literally got home and I was like looking up like wholesale, like what is wholesale? Like, what does that mean? And then that is how I stumbled across Trade Show Bootcamp and found it. And it was like, thank you, Katie, for enlightening me on this world. And the thing is, I'm a graphic designer and advertising. That's my background, marketing. And so I knew I could put together a catalog. I knew I could, you know, do the marketing for it, but I didn't know the rules of wholesale. And so that's where I think your whole course really helped me kind of hone in on that. And
well, and that's why I started it too. I mean, I didn't know the rules of wholesale. And, you know, bootcamp started because everyone shared their experiences. What, you know, everyone had a different area of expertise. And we said, let's get this all together so we can all learn how to kind of create these industry standards. So, and thank you for those kind words. But I really wanted a program that shared all the things I was learning on my own too. So it was really a collective team effort here. But so you started wholesaling in 2013. And you now have a huge team. I mean, you've got 15 full-time and part-time people working for you. I'm sorry. And
they can work for you too.
I'll take them. But you also have two retail shops and a huge studio space. So, you know, what was the first position that you hired for and how did it impact your business?
The first position I hired was not even, I don't even think she had a title at first.
Yeah.
I was in the cab at my second wholesale show, which was the National Stationery Show. I still had a full-time job while I did that show, mm-hmm. which was insane. I also went by myself.
That's crazy.
And yes, because I never want to ask for help, but I've learned how to now. I called her in the cab to the airport heading home and I said, and she had her and her now husband had helped build my booth. Uh-huh. And she had said to me, you know, if you ever need, you know, some part-time help, let me know. So I literally called her and I was like, hey, so yeah, I need some help filling these orders because I still have a full-time job, you know?
Yeah.
And so she started helping me part-time. Good. And she helped me part-time. My first full-time employee was her, but it wasn't until that next January.
Yeah.
I'm a really slow grower in terms of like hiring people and like, cause I don't want to hire someone on until I know that they could be on with us for a long time.
Absolutely.
And so, and to have the financial means to do that, cause payroll is super expensive as we all know. And so I just, and to be the right fit for our team.
I was going to say, aside from even the financial costs of having an employee, one, you want to make sure they're the right fit, that you know, mm-hmm. they fit with your culture of your business, but then also that, you know, they can do the job too. Do you ever start people on a trial period, you know, 36
days?
You
know, a lot of people on our team, our full-time team actually started on our assembly team.
Oh, nice.
So they started, yeah. It's really become like this nice cycle how it's happened. Our sales director now, who's been with us over 2 years, Celine Werner, she started off on our assembly team, and MK started off on our assembly team, and Haley started off on our assembly team. Claire, we did hire out, which, you know, when you hire someone directly out, you really do have to make sure they are that fit for your team. But when people have started on our assembly team, they really get an understanding of our products, how to put them together, what we offer,
yeah.
the quality, how it needs to be. Because we will not send a letterpress print out if it has a smudge on it. You know,
right.
like that's not going to happen. Like we're very picky with all of our products and make sure they're the highest of quality standards. And so the fact that they were able to like live in that world and then transition over to our full-time team, I feel like made so much sense. And so that's kind of the way we like to hire within.
Yeah.
And all of them came to me saying, I really want to grow within this company.
That's awesome.
And, you know, for us, we do kind of give an upper leg to our internal team, because if we are looking to hire, because they've been with us, they know the culture. We already know that you work well with others.
Right.
We already know that you are a team player, and that's huge here. Like we all work together. There's never a day where everyone's just like sitting in solitude by themselves working. Like
right.
there's, everyone is collaborative. We're always talking and meeting together and figuring out how to do things better.
Well, and when they start in a role like assembly, you can gauge a lot of things about them, their professionalism. Do they show up on time? You know, can they communicate well with everybody else? And you can see their strengths and weaknesses too. And if they are coming to you proactively and saying, I want to grow within this business, that's a huge indicator that they're the right fit for you too, assuming all the other things are falling into place. So that's
right.
awesome. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about, you've been involved in a large number of partnerships and collaborations, and I'd like to hear, if you're willing to share, how these things came about and, you know, especially from the standpoint of adding an additional revenue stream to your business. You know, some of the stuff you're doing, it's with some really big companies. So can you maybe walk us through one of those things of how it came to be and how the process was? I know that's quite a big question, but.
Yeah, we've partnered with large companies. We've partnered with smaller companies. And I think there's two different ways you have to handle it. With the larger companies, they're obviously going to have their rules in place. They're obviously going to have their standards, their contracts that you kind of have to negotiate with. And then when you're working with smaller companies that maybe haven't ever done a collaboration, we usually, because we've done them now, are the ones that are like, here's the contract. I think it's always so important to have a contract in place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some of the smaller companies that we've recently worked with, we reached out to them because we really love their philosophy, like Speak Wines and Throw Pillows
nice.
Are two current collaborations that we have going on. Actually, Speak, just our collaboration with them just ended. It was a sparkling wine label collection. that we came out with three different bottles. And Throw Pillows is still current. It's two different pillows that we developed for them. And for every 10 pillows that are sold, a bed is given to a child in need.
That's amazing.
And so, yeah. And so we developed those contracts for those collaborations stating like, this is when the sales report would have to be emailed to us. This is when the social media, like what we have to do for social media. Are you going to take photos? Like, because we've done stuff sometimes before, not in terms of a product collaboration, but collaborations where things weren't spelled out. And because of that, sometimes people can either be let down or they're, you expect more. Mm-hmm. And so we just don't want to leave any expectations on the table. We just want to spell them all out.
I love that you mentioned something as simple as social media, including that in the contract, because that's not something people would normally think about including in the contract. They'll think about, you know, sales reports and numbers and commissions and royalties and who, how the money split and who owns the work, you know, the copyright for the work and all of that stuff. But you're right. Setting those expectations within that contract, even down to the nitty gritty of how it's going to be marketed and.
Even blog posts, we put that in there because if someone's just like, oh yeah, I'll post about it, or like, well, and then they don't, then at least the contract like holds them to it and they can at least schedule out when those posts need to go up.
Well, and they probably appreciate it too, especially if it's a smaller company collaboration that may not, you know, I mean, a lot of us are flying by the seat of our pants here. So if somebody else can tell you, hey, on, you know, this exact date, we want you to post about this collaboration and here's some ideas, or, you know, maybe you guys work together to figure out what the topics will be, but, you know, having a deadline really creates action.
Yeah. And it works well for both parties. It really does. It keeps us all in check. And then in terms of larger companies working with us, they're usually the ones that bring us the like contracts and social media contracts. We've had separate contracts. We have the contract for work that we're doing, and then we have the social media contract.
Okay.
So there's two different contracts involved in some of our larger collaborations. One big collaboration that we have worked on for a while is we've worked with Hallmark. We came out with 7 cards with them in 2016, and then we came out with a holiday card in 2016, and then we came out with a 6-card Valentine's collection this year in 2017. And they are so much fun to work with. They've really been super awesome about wanting to showcase, I would say I'm a smaller designer, smaller designers in the world, and give them a voice on a larger platform. And like, as a child, like Hallmark was gold.
Right,
like
that's
with my grandparents all the time, and they would say, here's your $5.
Go pick a card. Yeah.
Yeah. Go pick out whatever you want in the store. And I always remember like being like, oh, I wonder who designs these cards, and thinking, I want to do the art per card. So it was really a childhood dream realized when they actually approached us.
That's awesome.
And they've been so great to work with. And they did a whole party and at the Atlanta market based around the success of our first collection we did with them. It's still selling really well. And it's really neat to be able to make the art for a product, and then we aren't the ones that are producing it.
And
we're still getting to promote it. And so that's been a really fun, large, I would say, voice collaboration that we've.
One thing that's happening or being discussed right now in our alumni forum is the process of the negotiation of like meeting with these bigger brands. Let's say Hallmark, just for example's sake. You know, one of the questions was, I have spec work I want to show them, but I want to protect myself because if we don't end up working together, I don't want them taking these ideas and running with them. So in the design phase of these collaborations, how do you handle that so that you're protecting yourself and, you know, essentially your intellectual property?
So most of the time I would say that we've signed contracts before we've actually moved forward in the process.
Okay.
But we have done some collaborations where a design process is needed to be seen before the actual contract is signed. Mm-hmm. And so what would happen in that case is an NDA is drawn up. Okay. A non-disclosure agreement is drawn up between the two parties that states, you know, that everything that is shown within the two parties remains within the two parties, that the work remains my work and your work. And it's, you know, so it's legally bound that they cannot use it or show it to anyone, and vice versa. We cannot talk about whatever we're discussing on the phone or on Skype or wherever.
Right, right.
That's okay. How we've done it with big, very, very large companies to small companies.
Awesome. I think that's really helpful for people to hear, because you do need to think about it from a legal standpoint as well as your business standpoint and design standpoint. It's all of the above. So tell us about a time that was kind of a transitional time for Thimble Press. How did you get through it?
Oh gosh, I feel like it's always a transition time.
Every day.
You know, and I always want it to be, and that sounds so cheesy, but like I never want to stop learning and stop trying to make ThimblePress better, because I think when you stop, you become complacent.
Yeah.
And
love that.
So that's one thing I really do try to challenge myself and not just rest on my laurels. But I don't know, I would say 2015 was a huge year of growth for us. It was from 2014, 2015, it just like exploded. And we also...
What do you credit that to? Was it new product development or new show, more shows, sales reps?
Well, we've had... I don't really... We did...
All of the above.
We did New York. Yeah, probably. We did New York Now for the first time in 2015, mm-hmm. which I think opened us up to a whole new buyer.
Right.
We had launched the Glitter Guide collection at the end of 2014. And so I think it gave 2015 that leg to kind of grow. And we really, I took my personal life off of ThimblePress social media and made my own social media for my personal life. But literally, I think that's what helped. So people weren't seeing photos of Willow and Henry. Well, Henry wasn't in my life yet, but Willow every day.
We love Willow.
Yeah, she's great. But our team grew a lot. We hired on a lot more people wholesale wise. We grew a lot wholesale.
Yeah.
We also signed on with, I believe, two other rep groups that year. I think it was that year. One that repped us in the California area, one that reps us in the Seattle, Canada area.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a whole new sector.
Those are major transitions. Those are major shifts.
And we also acquired the upper half of the building we were in, the second story.
Nope.
So that my office is upstairs, our photo studio is upstairs, and then a big meeting area is upstairs. And then on the back half, I live in it.
Oh, that's right.
It's upstairs. It's like 2,200 square feet with like a 1,500 square foot rooftop. So
Wow. That's
like on my same level. So it's a big space, and I'm just one person with two dogs. So, you know, I don't need that much space, but it was great. It allowed us to kind of like move around a little bit. And then at the beginning of last year, after like 6 months of trying to get the space next to us, we moved over into 2,700 more square feet downstairs,
wow.
which was a huge, huge, awesome transition for us, because we were able to spread, like we had stuff. When I say we were busting at the seams, like we had stuff up to the ceiling in our like downstairs. Like it was crazy. I don't even know how we did it. It was like hoarders times 10.
And this was your retail storefront, or this was your studio space?
We kept chopping down the retail storefront to make room for office, because it's really skinny and narrow. So we just kept putting like temporary walls up and making it smaller and smaller and smaller, because we needed space.
Yeah.
And then finally, when we acquired the building to the right of us, it allowed us to like have this huge assembly area and a shipping area and an office area and a conference room. And like we were able to breathe. And I felt like by doing that, we actually now can work more efficiently because we have that space.
Yeah.
And we were able to have our retail shop expand back out to its full, beautiful size.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Going back to your very first comment about like every day is a transition, you're always learning and don't want to rest. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. I tell people constantly that if you're not feeling a little bit uncomfortable in whatever you're doing, then you're doing something wrong. Because running a business is hard, and running a business can get very uncomfortable at times, because you are making tough decisions that, you know, play into the longevity of the business, the sustainability of the business. You're talking about people's livelihoods too. If you have a team, you know, there's all these different things that are weighing into what you're doing and what your next steps are. So what is something that you would tell somebody new entering the product world that wants to create a product-based business? What advice would you give them?
Oh gosh. I have lots of different little things. Just from a making a product standpoint, I keep a journal with me at all times, where like I call it my problems journal, but that sounds really negative. It's not like real problems. It's like the example I use all the time is like, if like in my car, I turn really fast turns and I always put stuff on my dashboard, and it always shifts to the other side and like bangs up against the side of my car, and it annoys me. And like, I just want to make a dash organizer where it doesn't, it will like stick on there and it won't shift. I'm sure someone's done it. I've talked about this a million times. It's my example I use for my problems journal, but that's solving a problem for me. So I'd like write it down and sketch it out in my notebook. Or like if I'm somewhere and I need something and it's not the way I needed it to be, well, what would it be if I had wanted to design that? What would it look like? And so I just sketch it down. And like, when you start to think like, start to do that, then you start to think like that. Yeah. And then you start to think about, well, what's a product I can make that would solve a problem and help someone? And ultimately, because the product's not about you, it's about your customer.
Absolutely.
And so, which we've talked about before, and you want whatever you're doing to solve someone's problem at the end of the day. Like, it's not about if it looks pretty or not, you need to help that person out.
Right.
And so by keeping that problems journal, or you can rename it something.
Great ideas journal.
You really, you really do start to train your brain to think that way and think, well, if I did it from little things to big things, even like I get in my car and I'm like, if I designed a car, it would have this, it would have eight cup holders and like, you know, and then I actually sketch it out like a crazy person because I know I'm never going to get to design a car. Although Subaru, if you are listening, I would love to be on a team to design a custom Outback. Just saying.
I want to see the Thimble Press Outback.
A special place for your golden doodles.
Hey, did you see, this is off topic slightly, but did you see our friends at Brainstorm, one of our alums, we are Brainstorm.
I love them.
They,
I love them.
They did, what was it? The Airstream. They designed the Airstream and they won. They won the contest.
Oh, that's awesome. They're two of the nicest humans ever.
Aren't they amazing?
Yes, I love them. And they love their dog too.
They do. They're great. I think they're traveling around the summer in the Airstream that they designed, which is,
I need to get them to come to Mississippi.
There you go. We'll have to shout them out. Cool. Well, thank you for that. I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's super important whether you're selling a product or a service, but since most of our people sell products, like it needs to be solving a problem for your customer. You need to be thinking about it from their point of view when you're not only developing it, but then also when you're selling it too, right? So.
And one other thing is I also think about this when I'm developing products. How will people use it on Instagram? How will they take photos of it? And how will it be social media friendly? Like, yes, it's solving a problem, but now we want to make it look really cool so that people want to share it on social media.
Yeah. This brings me, you have amazing visibility. I mean, you, your Instagram feed, how many followers do you have? Like, you have like 350,000 followers?
Not that much. Okay. But we work really hard on it. And I know everyone does, but we're constantly doing photo shoots. We're constantly thinking of new ways to interact and help and engage our customers. And that's something that, but that's also my background.
Right.
That's like my building, like that's where I came from, was that world of marketing and advertising. And so that's where I feel like I can excel the most. If I were an accountant, I'd probably have the most amazing books.
Is that something you still handle personally, or do you outsource that or have a team member do it?
So we have a PR marketing director, but I'm also very heavily involved in it.
Okay.
But she's awesome. She works with all of our influencers. She works with all the press, and she does a really, really good job. And she has a great voice of Thimble Press, and she actually started out on our, she was our customer service director. She actually handled all the orders that would come in, direct consumer orders. And then she would, she also managed our retail shop in the front. And when it was time that she could possibly transition to this position, it was a no brainer. She does a really great job of the Thimble Press voice and also kind of my voice too. I feel like how she says it on our, any marketing pieces, it's really how I would say it.
That is so important. I talk to a lot of people that are, and myself included, who are like afraid to hand off that piece of it, you know, the social piece, because, you know, our brands are ourselves and we want it to sound like us. We don't want it to sound like
scam. And her desk is right around the corner from mine, so she knows what a cheese ball I am. And so she's really gotten to know my personality. And so I think that helps too, because she's known me for a while and she knows what a dork I am. And so she totally can infuse that into all the language that we use.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. I know, you know, social media is something that a lot of people struggle with simply from the time standpoint. But I've been telling more and more people that I'm only posting once a day and I'm trying to schedule it out with all the different tools that are there.
Right.
I mean, do you have any other tips or tricks that you'd recommend to people?
Yeah. So we, once the Instagram algorithm changed, which wah, wah, wah.
Right?
But they're a business. They can do it. They're out for money. That's, I mean, that's the end game. But so, you know, what I would say is, and we've talked about this before, build up your email list. Mm-hmm. Definitely focus on building that up, because what if Instagram quit one day? What if Facebook quit one day? Not that it is. Don't let everyone freak out. But you can't rely on that, them not to change how they do things, because just like you're running a business, they're running a business.
Absolutely.
And so I would say build up your email list as much as you can. And then for social media posting purposes, we've now, since the algorithm has changed, we used to post like 3 times a day, and now we post 1 to 2 times a day, because it's the more engagement you get on one photo, it brings you up further, I believe. That's how it is. And it shows it to more people.
Yeah.
Especially if you have interactions on it. I feel like when there's more interactions, more people are going to see it.
Totally.
I don't know. I wish I knew the brain of how it all worked, but. And then we also use grum.co. It's a website, and it helps us schedule out our Instagram so that we can really see how it's going to look and how it's going to flow with like our photos and our language. And it actually will post it for you. So then it gives us more time. We're not so focused on like, what photo are we going to post today? We're more focused on how are we going to engage with our customers? Right. How are we going to respond to them? We want to like have conversations with you and not be so focused on what we're posting that day, because we already know. We're already ready for the responses that are going to come, and we always make sure everything we're posting about, we have it in stock, or we have enough in stock, because what if you post something and you have like 100 of something and they just disappear?
Right.
Well, then we're SOL.
So, right.
So like we get with like our inventory director, and that's why it's important for us to schedule them out, so we can know exactly like in our weekly meetings when we meet on Fridays, what's not in stock, or what are we low in stock on, so that we know not to post about that until it is back in stock.
That brings me to my next question. How far out do you plan? Like, is it just a week to week type thing, or do you plan further out? Do you have an editorial calendar? That sounds so official.
We don't. I know that is so official, and no, I'm not that fancy. We just basically have a whole folder of images, and Kate will go like, as we do photo shoots and flat lays and all this stuff, and we make them down to like web size, and we put them in a ready for Grum folder.
Nice.
And then as Kate has time, she goes in and schedules them in depending on where they would look and how they would look in our feed. And if they're in stock as well. So on Friday meetings, we'll say these are scheduled to post in the next 2 weeks.
Nice.
Do we have these in stock? Do we not have these in stock? But we can also get onto our inventory software and check for ourselves if we need to as well. But we have, I think right now there's like 42 images that are in the queue.
Okay.
And so say like we miss a day, then it's okay, because Grum will post, you know, a photo. Or on Saturdays and Sundays, like I fully believe in taking those days for yourself and our team as well. And so having it be able to post those on those days, and I can just get on then in bed on a Saturday and interact with people versus worrying about, I've got to go take a flat lay of something posted on a Saturday.
Right. So. Yeah. No, you mentioned Grum to me a couple months back, and I fell in love instantaneously because it did. It allowed me a lot more flexibility, and
They do not pay me that.
You need to get an affiliate link for that, girl. And we will definitely include that link in the show notes for anybody that is interested, because it's not a free service, but I will say, unlike it's many so of the cheap, others though. That are, it is, it's cheap. It's a cheap monthly service, but unlike a lot of others that are out there, this one will post the images for you with your captions and your hashtags and all that stuff. Whereas a lot of the other ones will, you know, notify you that you need to post and you have to go.
You may as well then.
Right.
Yourself.
I know, but I will say, like, you know, when I have my events or when I know I'm going to be traveling for work or whatever it might be, it's just been so helpful to not only see it all scheduled out like you're talking about, but I also don't have to worry about it while I'm on the road. So
yeah. And then like we'll also leave some spaces in for like some spontaneous images that maybe we want to post.
Yep. Me too, which I love, because it just you can work it any which way you want. So, and I agree with you. I mean, social media is intended to be social. So I also want to be on there engaging with people and answering questions and you know, commenting on other people's stuff too. So I don't look at it as just a pushing content out. I really view it as a place to have those conversations.
Right.
So awesome. Well, that's a great tip. I really appreciate that. So tell us what's next for Thimble Press. Where are you going from here? What do you have on tap for this year?
Well, I'm about to go on a Disney cruise with my family for 4 days. Everyone pray for me. No. I think it'll be okay. I've literally researched all this stuff on cruises. I've been on one before, but I wanted to be really prepared this time. And so, you know, anyway, but that's not Thimble Press. We have a really large collaboration coming out that I can't talk about quite yet.
Okay.
In March. That's awesome. And I feel like will be a game changer. Awesome. You know what it is.
I do, but I won't tell. Your secret's safe with me.
That I think is going to be really awesome. At least I hope it will be for Thimble Press. Mm-hmm. I think it will like take our name to some new households maybe, and some new people that may have never heard about us, which is exciting. And then we have another collaboration that will be coming out in July, and I'm not sure if I can talk about it, so I won't.
I have a question for you. You said something to me. I'm totally interrupting you, and I apologize. We'll come back to what's next for Thimble Press at the end. But you said something in one of when we were chatting recently about how you get asked to do collaborations with a lot of companies that may not be right with your brand. It might not be a good fit for Thimble Press. And you had a really great suggestion for this. You talked about creating a different name or a different sub-brand or something.
What was that brilliant thing I said?
Yes. So you talked about creating a secondary brand for the things that you still wanted to do that could be lucrative for your business, but so they wouldn't dilute your Thimble Press brand. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more? Because I think that's a really great concept.
I haven't done it, but I think it's a smart way to approach something that, like you were saying, that could be really good for your business, but maybe isn't aligned in terms of not values, but in terms of, I guess, target market maybe.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, for example, if you're selling a high end, if your company is really high end and selling a high end product, and you get approached by something that's more of an everyday, lower, you know, middle market or low market thing, you probably wouldn't want your high end luxury brand to be associated with that.
Right, and so you could really depending on how your business is structured, you could basically create a new business underneath the umbrella of your existing business, mm-hmm. give it a new name, all new social media channels. No one necessarily has to know it's associated with you at all. And you could basically, people do this all the time. There is nothing wrong with doing that. And then you get to still do what you love, but sell it to maybe a different target market.
Yeah.
And so that is an option too for maybe things that approach you and you're like, well, don't want to be really associated that with Thimble Press, but this could be an amazing opportunity to really like sink in and build some capital for my business. Okay, let's maybe come up with a new name and do a whole new brand, which that sounds crazy and it sounds like a lot of work, but y'all are all creative. You can do it quickly.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it's kind of a way to explain this to other people. It's similar to, you know, the whole Banana Republic, Gap, Old Navy type of tier, so to speak, of they all cater to different audiences. And
that's a great example. Yeah.
So you could do the same. When we talked about that off, you know, outside of the podcast, I thought that was a really great concept because there are a lot of really cool, fun, creative collaborations that could happen. And if you have the time and desire to do them, but it's just not the right fit for your business, that's a really great way to still kind of get involved and try it out.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Mm-hmm. Now, I know sometimes companies, they're like, well, no, we want
the Thimble Press brand.
Yeah, they want to work with, you know, and so I think you just have to negotiate. That's all in the negotiations.
Right.
And if you're like, well, I could do the same kind of art, but under a different name.
Yeah.
And that's one thing actually I've been trying to do is develop my personal art collection and illustration chops just under my name.
Yeah.
To possibly do more licensing, but it's not necessarily under Thimble Press, because a lot of times when you do a collaboration under Thimble Press or under your brand, you're associating it with, you have to do all the social media, you have to do all the blogging, you have to do, it just brings in a whole other, I guess, beast into the factor of the collaboration. So I'm trying to develop just a portfolio under Kristen Lay.
That's cool.
And just maybe do some licensing under that.
I do licensing still through my Kelp brand, and it's been awesome because, you know, it's work that's still relevant and I have the audience for it, but I don't, like you were talking about with the collaborations, I don't have to develop the product and I don't have to sell it. I mean, I definitely push people there, but I agree.
I think that's a lot. Manufacturing and all that, that's a lot of time and money.
It is, for sure. All right, so I'm going to circle back because I started to ask this question, then I interrupted you. So tell us, what's next for Thimble Press?
So like I mentioned, we have that collaboration coming out in March that I'm super excited about. We've been working on it since November of 2015.
Oh, wow.
So super thrilled. Then in July, we have another collaboration that will be coming out that I think is going to be a really fun product. And the thing about collaborations, and I'll throw this in there, is we like to work with people who make things that we don't get to make in Thimble Press.
Yeah.
So it's super cool to be able to get to see your art and your brand being developed into a whole new world of products that you never thought you would get to make. So that's super, super cool.
That is.
We are not doing any more trade shows this year, which, shocker, everyone, I know, but this year, 2017, I'm really trying to take a step back, and wholesale's a really, really big part of our brand. It's the biggest part of our brand. We do really well in stores and we love it so much, but we also want to develop our direct to consumer side as well. So we're going to be coming out with a bunch of new products in May and in August.
Nice.
And instead of using the money for the trade show, we're investing it into the products. And personally, on a personal level, I'm really tired.
Yeah.
The shows take a lot of work. If I could just be carried in like Mariah Carey, you know, and work the shows, that would be fine. But the setup and breakdown are, the older I get and the more I do it, we've done 9 New York shows. They're just really exhausting. And I'm gone from the office for a week. And so I'm really trying to weigh my like time versus money versus like exhaustion. And this 2017 is the year of me. I'm trying to focus more on my personal life and like actually having a life. I've spent 5 years literally doing nothing but Thimble Press. And so I'm excited about this. I was really apprehensive to even say it out loud that we weren't doing any more trade shows. We did January in New York, and it was good. It wasn't the best trade show we've ever had, but I finally accepted, like, I was like, I need to take a step back and I need to rest. And I want to develop lots of really awesome products. And if you're in a small business, you know, it takes money to do that. It takes money. And we want to develop a huge August launch. And so it's going to take like 50 to 75 grand to develop all this. So
yeah.
I'm like, we got to save some money.
Well, you must have felt so much relief when you finally did say it out loud and make the decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally was like, Kristen, waiting to excel. And it was like taking a deep breath and just like letting it all out and accepting the fact I wasn't going to do them and being really happy about it.
I love that you shared this on the podcast, because you know my philosophy is that you don't need to do trade shows to have a successful wholesale line. Really, you need to get your systems and processes and your product line dialed in. Like, there's so much that comes before you should ever think about doing a trade show. And you also set the rules for your business. So if this year is no shows, so you can focus on your time and money on other things and also focus on yourself, fantastic. You can always jump back into it later if you think it's the right fit for your business at that time.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've always done Thimble Press anyways. I've kind of just always done it how I've wanted to do it.
Yeah, you should.
And march to the beat of my own drum and not let an industry decide that for me.
Yep.
And so, you know, we probably will do it next January, New York Now. So we're going to be a year, you know, I think that's great. And we're going to do a double booth.
Yeah.
And so we're going to come back out with an even larger space and just kill it, hopefully.
You will. You'll have all the product. You'll have all the new product too, which will be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really excited about our team is even more excited about it. I'm going to take some trips this year, which I'm really thrilled about. So it'll be good. It'll be good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It was amazing to sit down and chat with you. I mean, I'm a total business geek when it comes to talking about this kind of stuff, but I know our listeners are going to love hearing your story and how you've grown Thimble Press and all the different revenue streams too. I think the licensing and collaboration stuff is really good for them to hear, because there's a lot you can do. It's not just about selling direct to consumer. It's not just about selling wholesale. There's lots of other ways to grow your business and make money. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Kristen. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all soon. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies.
You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.